Hi everyone, I'm Heidi Rogers, and this is Tell the Others. I wanted to create a place for meaningful conversation, life lessons, and parenting hacks. Sometimes I chat to interesting people, sometimes I answer questions about parenting or life stuff, and sometimes I just rant. These episodes are filled with stories and insights that made me say, ugh, I just have to tell the others. So let's dive in to hear what we can learn today. How does anxiety affect any long-term mental health issues? Fantastic question. Very common. So anxiety is long-term, lifelong, mainly because it's kind of a normal function of a healthy brain. A healthy brain is wired to experience anxiety because your amygdala, like, unless you can surgically remove your amygdala, you're always going to have anxiety because it's kind of how you stay safe, you know. They've actually done in studies and research of people who either lose, you know, part of their amygdala to cancer, you know, and it's removed, or a car accident or something that's damaged, are just, you know, way more into risk taking and just don't care. And yeah, so your amygdala's whole job is to keep you safe. And as long as you have an amygdala, you're going to have anxiety. The degree to it obviously is different for everyone. But I think the key phrase that to me goes hand in hand with anxiety is the word manage. It's never something we're rid of. It's never something we try to avoid. It's not like that. It's just something you learn to manage. You know, it's like, I don't know, getting your period as a woman. It's never something that goes away. It's just something you manage. You know, it's like, it's just a natural, normal part of life, you know, and that's anxiety. It's just natural, normal part of life. You just got to learn how to manage it. The problem is the majority of us don't know how to manage it. And because all of us were raised by rookies and parents who weren't experts, they were doing it their first go around, and then they got hired for this job with absolutely no experience. You're learning how to manage your anxiety by people who have no idea how to even manage it for themselves. So how does it affect long-term mental health issues? I mean, how much time do you have? How long is a piece of string? I mean, anxiety can impact all sorts of things. I mean, anxiety can have an impact on depression. It can have an impact on relationships, self-confidence, self-esteem, jobs, relationships at school, relationships at work, massively. And any of you who have struggled with anxiety know how powerful it is and know how overwhelming it is. It's like a blanket. It's like you just touches every part of you. You can't get it off. And it's so frustrating. And so whenever I talk about anxiety, the first thing that kind of jumps into my mind is that it is not a choice. That everyone who experiences it hates it, wishes it wasn't there, and would pay, you know, in a limb if they could to turn it off. So that I want to say first, because I often get a question whenever I do anxiety presentations where a parent will say, I don't have anxiety at all. I find it very frustrating to access empathy from my child who's anxious because I have no experience really with it. And I think to that, you know, clap, clap, good for you. I'm happy for you. That's magical that you can live a life without anxiety. But it's a very common thing for a lot of kids. And so I think where you got to start is first saying to yourself, this is not their choice. They're not picking this. Same with friends and partners. You know, clients will say to me, my roommates give me such a hard time when I change my mind at the last minute and don't want to go to the party that we've just been spending 2 hours getting ready for and doing our hair and makeup for. And then at the last second, I bail and have a panic attack and they get, you know, mad at me and give me a hard time about it. Who the hell would pick that? My God, nobody wants to be anxious. It sucks. Every time of my life I've ever felt anxious, I hate it. And I just, I want to just literally flick the switch to get it to turn off. It's disgusting, especially when it has that real overwhelming feeling where you can't eat and you can't think straight and you feel all consumed by it. It's horrendous. So that's the first thing, is it's not a choice. And so please dish out the compassion and empathy to the people in your life that suffer from it, because it's just, they don't pick it. So how does it affect long-term mental health issues? I think it affects long-term mental health issues if it's not being managed and it's not being addressed. So as long as you're having a crack and you're trying to help your child address it, I think that's great. And then you're on kind of the path, you know, of where you want to be going. What could you be doing though? Let me pull up, I'll pull up the anxiety webinar from last week, which I think went up this last week, which is a good one. But what you want to be doing is the first thing you want to be doing with anxiety, this is for you and for anyone, is, and for your kids, is teaching them how to separate it. So you want to give your anxiety like a name, or you want to give it like Piglet or Rex from Toy Story or C-3PO, or, you know, any, or call it Bob, call it Janet, whatever, just a way that you want to separate it from them. And it's not you, it's your anxiety. It's external to you. It is not you. Okay. That's key thing, is to teach your kids that it is not you. That is so important that it's separate. And a lot of kids and a lot of parents I work with have told me that they find that is so helpful for their kids to see the anxiety as Bob or Jerry or, you know, whatever. It's not me. So it's practical skills for anxiety and anger. Now, again, just highlighting that a lot of people don't know that they come from the same place, but they do. It's anxiety and anger both originate from the amygdala, which is why you get the fight, because anger is the fight flight response, but anxiety is a lack of safety, really, that when I'm anxious, I feel unsafe about something. So what are the things you can do for anxiety? First of all, develop internal reassurance skills so anxiety doesn't become their inner voice, which is what unfortunately happens for most anxious people, is that their inner voice is just that panicky, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. You know, I have on this slide some of the greatest hits of who are some characters that are known for being a little bit anxious in their roles. And so I tell kids often, you know, do you want to pick a character or a movie character or just a name? Ask them to draw it, you know, what does it look like? But yeah, this is the great skill of anxiety, is separating it. That's absolutely number one. It's not you. Then two, explain what is anxiety, you know, what happens in your body, what is it? Well, it's your amygdala. Your amygdala just tries to keep you safe. And this is where that book, Hey Warrior, is vital. I even shared that with a 17-year-old client last week who's new to the whole, how do I manage my anxiety? And she found it really helpful, even though it's a kid's book. It still is a really great way to explain it to kids. Then we respond versus react to our child when they're feeling anxious. We normalize and validate. Yeah, it's really hard. I can see what's happening. You know, Bob, anxiety, AKA, has just shown up and you're feeling really worried about this. And Bob is, man, he is so great at making you worry about stuff that you're good at, isn't he? Teaching them to tolerate the not knowing, because that's a huge part of anxiety, or it is the whole thing about anxiety, is this slide, you know, that they are finding it hard to tolerate uncertainty and embrace the emotions that come with anxiety. And that's what we're doing as parents, is we're coaching them to learn to tolerate uncertainty and embrace their emotions. Okay. But back to this one. And then we teach them about how we can discern between the worry and our imagination, and how our worry tends to kind of combine with our imagination and then create a crisis. We don't focus on the content, but rather the process. And what that means is your amygdala will have a greatest hits tape that it will play for your anxiety, which is basically like, this is a new situation and you can't blah, 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 and you can't handle it. And so what we want to always say back to the anxiety is it's kind of always the same, right? Because the message that anxiety, if it's at swimming, school, new job, going to a social function, it doesn't really matter what the social, or like what the trigger point is, what the thing is that makes me feel anxious. It doesn't really matter. It's kind of always the same. And the amygdala will always say the same thing, which is blah, 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 and you can't handle it, whatever the situation is. So we don't create a sort of script back for the anxiety that's specific to the, you know, scenario of a test or driving or going across bridges or the party, whatever. No, it's always the same. And on this slide, you have your greatest hits that you play in reaction to it, right? So when amygdala, anxiety, Bob, whatever you want to call it, talks, you roll your eyes and are just like, oh, you are so predictable and so boring, Brian. You always say the same thing, which is blah, 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 and you can't handle it. And you know what? I'm not going to listen to you. You're always trying to keep me from learning and growing stronger. Or I know my silly brain. I know it wants to know everything. And Brian likes to feel comfortable. Of course, Brian's going to show up. Ugh, he always shows up. He's such a pain. But you know what, Brian? I learned how to swim. I learned how to do the monkey bars. I learned how to make new friends at footy. I was really good at getting my teeth cleaned. So if I can do all those things, I can do anything. So you teach them the script of like three lines. That's what we always say back to Brian. Whenever Brian chimes in with his dumb little thoughts about what you can't handle, we say back to Brian, Brian, I'm not going to listen to you. You're always trying to keep me from learning. And I know you just want to feel comfortable, Brian, but a large part of life is being uncomfortable. So thanks for showing up and thanks for telling me your concern, but I got it. I can do anything. Okay. Just like I did swimming and just like I did whatever. Okay. So that's, you kind of come up with your three points that you always say back to Brian or Janet or, you know, whatever you want to call your anxiety. And it's predictable and it's boring and it's nothing new. And so that's why a lot of times on the way to an event or a way to a thing or the night before, when you know there's the anxiety's coming, we talk about, what are we going to say to Brian? Because, you know, do you think Brian's going to be there? And it's so great for kids because then they get to go, oh, it's not me. It's just stupid Brian, you know? So that's the whole thing of doing a process focus rather than a content focus. The process for how we speak to our anxiety. And that's the next line of rewrite the script. The script is always the same. Okay. Flexibility and yes, that basically means, can I say yes and be more flexible with things? Can I teach them flexibility? Because a lot of anxiety has to do with rigidity and things needing to be the same. So if we can model flexibility, that's huge. And I love it when parents say, I don't really suffer from anxiety, but I'm very rigid. I'm like, that's cute, because actually rigidity is BFF with anxiety. And a lot of us who are rigid and control freaks, actually what our real jam is we have issues with flexibility, because flexibility to the amygdala is dumb, because it means I might not be safe. So have a look at yourself when you like to say, oh, I don't really have issues with anxiety, but I just am quite a control freak and I don't like being flexible. Usually the reason why we don't like being flexible and we like to be rigid is because our amygdala has taught us that that's a great way to stay safe and a great way to avoid or minimize feelings of anxieties if we're in control and rigid. So can I say yes more? Can I be more flexible? Don't jump in the car is when anxiety shows up, you don't have to get in the car. Just because anxiety has shown up doesn't mean, you know, if Brian pulls up and goes, I'm out front, come on. You know, just because we normally have panic attacks around swimming lessons or when I have a test or something, that doesn't necessarily mean that I need to jump in. So I usually like to just acknowledge, oh, guys, Brian's pulled up outside. Or, sweetheart, I can tell that Brian's kind of, is he coming close? I can see him kind of off in the distance. Is he trying to pull up at the house here and pick you up? And speaking about it like that, because again, it's not you, it's your anxiety, it's Brian. So trying, and I even think of Brian, you know, the dog from Family Guy. That's one of my favorites for naming anxiety and having a visual to go with it. Because I just, it kind of makes me laugh and kind of, I don't know, loosens up my brain a little bit. Yeah. So if Brian shows up, we don't have to get in the car. And then focusing on past wins is kind of an obvious one, but that's just kind of saying to your kids, you know, well, remember the last time when we started school and you had the new teacher or you had the new class or the new school or the new gymnastics coach or whatever, you got through it, didn't you? And how did you get through it? By pushing yourself just a little bit. And we don't go to swimming lessons and say, jump in, and we throw them in. We say, hey, if you want to put your feet in today, that's cool. And then if tomorrow you want to, you know, go in up to your knees, that's cool. You don't need to do swimming. I know you'll do it when you're ready. And I know Brian's pretty loud today. So let's see what we can do to help Brian chill out next time. It's just anxiety, I think, is a lot of times of just three steps forward, two steps back, three steps forward, two steps back, and just being patient that it kind of takes a while. And then I'll go down to this other slide of number three, role play the mixtape. So I often do that with kids. I will say to them, you know, what does your anxiety say? What does he want to say? And then can we talk to it? Okay, so you have the test tomorrow. All right, what's Brian saying? And then they might go, he's saying that I'm going to fail it. Okay, well, who do you want me to be? Do you want me to be Brian or do you want me to be you? And usually they want to be Brian because they know exactly what anxiety is going to say. And then you can kind of play the sort of devil's advocate and try to help them get a handle on it. And then once you've role played it a couple of times where you say are them, then switch it and give them a go. And you play Brian. And the purpose of that too is just getting that repetition and getting the like language in their brain and coming out of their mouth so they know what to say back. Because that's a lot of times what it is people don't know what to say back. So they just go, don't think about pink elephants. Don't think about pink elephants. And then they're screwed because that's all they're thinking about, right? They don't get a replacement thought in there. So the role play really helps them get a replacement thought going. Ladder goals are really great when you're working towards an anxiety thing that is like a goal, like an accomplishment. Like, I want to be able to be around dogs. You know, I'm terrified of dogs. I'm so anxious around dogs. I'd love to be able to go to my friend's house that has a dog. You know, what can I do to get closer to that goal? And we build the ladder. So we start at the bottom of, okay, can I watch videos of dogs? No. Okay. Can I look at photos of dogs? Yes. All right. So we start there. Kids that I've done this with, we're graduating up to being able to do sleepovers. We start with trying to do sleepovers in like different parts of the house so I can sleep in a different room to practice sleeping in a different place. Then once I kind of have a handle on that, then we'll move up to, is there a family member that you could have a sleepover with, an auntie or grandparent? Trying that for a little bit. Once you get your head around that, then graduating to having a friend stay over, then I go to their house and I maybe get picked up at 10. And I know I'm getting picked up at 10 or 12 if mom and dad are ambitious and can stay up late. Then you can have all that fun and then you know at 12. And you just sort of incrementally kind of exposure therapy them into building up the confidence to I stay till 12. And then it could be, you know, mom says, you can call me at any time in the night. I'll have my phone on. Even if it's 2 a.m., if you want me to come get you, I'll come get you. And you just slowly build up to then accomplishing the goal. And then flexibility wall is a cute little idea with post-it notes where you basically reward and praise and cheer on moments of flexibility or moments where you sort of talked back to Brian and it worked. Or maybe it didn't even work. Maybe you just talked back to Brian and you said to him, you know, so, and maybe it's like your child comes home and says, you know, mom, Brian showed up today and Brian didn't want me to play basketball. And I was just sitting there at recess and I was like, I really want to play. But Brian was like, no, you can't. You suck. You're not going to win. Nobody's going to want you on your team. And I was like, you know what, Brian? Shut up. I'm going to try and play and I'm never going to get any better at basketball and they're never going to let me play if I don't just try. So I'm going to try. And I tried and they let me play for 2 minutes and then, you know, they teased me, but I played for 2 minutes. Awesome. Oh my gosh. Let's write that for the wall. And then you write on a little post-it, you know, Brian didn't want me to play basketball and I pushed past him and said, no, screw you, Brian, I'm going to play. And you write that on the post-it. And then what happens is they start to see all of these great visual reminders of all of these times that I pushed past Brian, told him to shut up, and he didn't win, you know, and I got the sort of tally mark on the board because I had a crack. And it's a really great visual way. And I do this even, and all of these things, by the way, I do with my adult clients. This isn't like a 2-year-old, you know, thing. I do this with all my clients, with adults. You know, we maybe don't call it a goal ladder, but we go, you know, like a reverse engineering thing where we start with, okay, well, where can we start? If it's, I want to ask a girl out on a date, but I'm too anxious to get to that point. We start with even just going to a bar or, you know, going to a social setting where I have the chance to meet someone. And then we work our way up. And the same thing with role play, the mixtape. I do that with clients all the time where we'll say, okay, so you're afraid to tell your mom, you know, back off and stop giving me parenting advice. Okay. So, you know, I'll be you, you be your mom. Okay. Off we go. And then we'll run through what we can say and then we'll reverse it for them to practice, you know, saying that. Role play is really, really, really helpful in teaching our kids how to do stuff and how to speak back to bullies, but with anxiety, especially because it's so, the anxiety is so powerful when they're in the moment, you know. Moves, mirror, validate, empathize. That's a key with anxiety for sure. So anxiety convention is what I call an event or a situation where we know for damn sure anxiety is going to be there. Like, social, you know, like a party or a test or first day of school, you know, if we go, oh yeah, that's an anxiety convention. Ooh, yeah, it's going to be everywhere. Then we do a lot of prevention stuff. So we do moves, mirror, validate, empathize, the days leading up, the day of, get really specific about what's your amygdala saying, you know, what's Brian saying, what's our script? Is there someone else I can transfer the child to? Or a special job they can have so they can kind of keep their amygdala busy rather than just sitting and obsessing about what they're afraid of. Can they have a special necklace, bracelet, treasure in their pocket, or a photo or something that makes them feel connected? Again, all of these things I do with my adult clients. This is not just limited to an age thing where clients who will say carrying a special crystal in their pocket or their mom's bracelet or a family photo, just something to fiddle with in their pocket they can find really helpful. Being on time, sweet Jesus, how much does being late stress all of us out and make our amygdala flip? So being on time, leaving early, allowing an extra 30 minutes just in case, staying calm, and, you know, back on and regulating your own discomfort. And back on this one, I have this photo of the oxygen mask in the plane because that is like the key, you guys. You got to put on your anxiety oxygen mask first and stay calm and not get sort of swept away with the crazy fairies when Brian shows up. You know, we can't have you running around the house going, oh my God, Brian's out front, you guys. Oh my God. Like, that does not help anyone. And if your kid's trying to learn how to regulate, y'all got to stay calm, man. You got to stay solid. And that just takes practice. If you don't know how to do that, like, no shame. That's fine. None of us know how to do it. Like, it's all practice. And you just got to be working on doing your own work of managing your own anxiety. And this whole module is like straight up for all adults. This has nothing to do with kids. This is very, very, very relevant for adults too. So yeah, be working on your anxiety and staying calm. And then the last one that I had on this slide, where was it? Is avoiding sticker charts, prize candy, rewarding brave behavior, which I call those things suppressing your feelings. Because a lot of times when kids go, I didn't even cry, I'm like, oh, cringe. That's not what we want to be teaching. Yikes. No, we want our kids to feel totally comfortable expressing their emotions, crying, feeling the feelings for sure. And sticker charts, prize candy, and reward for, you know, not letting their anxiety get to them or whatever is also an extrinsic reward thing. Whereas what we want to be teaching our kids is an intrinsic reward where they feel awesome about themselves. And it's their own self-esteem and confidence that is the reward, you know, that internal pat on the back that they give themselves where they feel really proud of themselves that Brian showed up and I was like, what's up, Bri? You know, have a seat. Thanks for coming. Thanks for sharing your concern. But I got this, dude. You can go or you can stay, whatever. But I, you know, you can watch kind of me do swimming lessons because I got it, you know. And that's kind of the key thing too with anxiety, I think, is like I always say inviting it to tea. And sort of like you invite anxiety in and you say like, oh, Brian, hey, what's up? Yeah, come on in. Let's have a chat. Tell me. Yep. Mm-hmm. So you're concerned about, yeah, that. Oh, and that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Great points, Bri. Great points. Love it. Yeah. But this is my 10th time starting school. So I'm actually quite a pro. I've also survived 100% of my days. So I have a pretty good track record. I've not died yet. So I think I got this, dude. But I know why you're here, because you're just trying to keep me safe. I totally get it. You're trying to protect me, but I got this. All right. So you can just, you know, have a Coke and a smile and chill. I got it. And teaching our kids that, and adults, I mean, I teach this to adults all the time. Our anxiety isn't someone to get rid of. Our anxiety isn't someone to like exclude, abandon. There's a lot of wisdom in anxiety. And that is a really huge shift, I think, that a lot of us don't do, which is why, you know, on this slide, when I say externalize it, none of these people are like vicious, scary. They're all harmless looking people and, or, you know, animals or characters. And that's what we want to do with their anxieties, befriend it and be like, oh, you're here. Hello. And I'm not afraid of you anymore. And I'm not afraid if you show up. And I'm not afraid if you speak, because I know you're here to tell me something that I need to be looking at. And every part of myself is welcome. Every part of myself is allowed. Every part of myself is lovable. And anxiety is no different. And I want to hear what you have to say. Because the problem is when you abandon and reject a part of yourself, or you teach your children to abandon and reject a part of themselves, it doesn't work. Because then that sort of person is sort of standing outside the door, banging on the door, going, let me in, let me in. I know you guys are having a meeting. I know you're talking about me. I want to come in. And it just creates this like internal tension, frustration. It takes a lot of energy to kick people out of meetings and make, you know, Brian or whoever, anger, fear, sadness, all of the different parts of ourselves. If you kick them out and you don't allow them to be at the meetings to discuss what we're doing and, you know, how do we feel about stuff, it just creates a real fragmented person. And a lot of the work I do with clients and individual work is learning how to integrate, you know, finding all the parts of ourselves that we've rejected or abandoned, then reconciling with them. I'm sorry I kicked you out, you know, bad thing that happened to me or bad thing that I did. I'm sorry I wouldn't let you into any of the meetings, but you just scare the shit out of me. Or you remind me of a really vulnerable time of my life, or you make me feel weak and helpless, and I don't like that. So that's why I kick you out of meetings. But I see that you are important. You're a part of me and you're a part of my life. So I want to integrate you into my life and I want to integrate you into myself. And that's what we want to be teaching our kids, is how to not reject and abandon parts of themselves so that they then have to come see me in therapy to find them, recover them, reconcile with them, integrate with them. We don't want it to get to that point. We want to be teaching them now, hey, all the parts of you, all the ways that you feel, all the things that go through your mind about how you feel or how you think or whatever emotions or stuff come through, they're all welcome. They all have something to say. They all are relevant. They're all lovable. They're all worthy of love and belonging. Okay. So whatever thoughts, feelings, emotions, or, you know, roles that you have to play, all the different parts of who you are and what make up you, they're all welcome. Okay. And we don't have to abandon or reject any parts of ourselves. They're all welcome to be here. And I want to teach you how to integrate them. But the biggest, again, back to the biggest step of all, awareness. We have to first realize that this is even happening. Okay, who have I abandoned? Who have I, you know, rejected? And oftentimes with anxiety, they get rejected and abandoned. And I hate my anxiety and I wish it wasn't here. And parents saying to their kids, your anxiety is so frustrating. It's so inconvenient. God, you're so difficult with all of your inflexible rigidity crap. Like, oh, you're such a pain in the ass. I have to pick you up. I have to leave work early, whatever. And that doesn't help, because one, they're not picking it. When we act like that, we're making them think that there's something wrong with them when it's not them. It's just stupid ass Brian. And we're teaching them, because we're rejecting a part of them, we're teaching them that that's a part of themselves that they need to reject and abandon. And we don't want to do that. We want to teach them that all parts of themselves are lovable and worthy and deserve a seat at the table, and they have something to say. And a lot of times anxiety comes from a real sensitive place, a real tender part that sees and feels deeply. You know, a lot of people who are really anxious are very deep feelers and very sensitive and empathic and have a lot of really beautiful traits. They just kind of don't know. I always say, you don't know how to work your superpowers yet. Because all that sensitivity and all those big feelings, we got to teach your brain how to work with them. And we got to teach your brain how to channel their superpowers. And that just takes time and practice and learning how to do that. So, yeah. So that is a whole lot of talk about how does anxiety affect long-term mental health issues? What I guess I want you to learn from today or take away from today is that anxiety is a lot. Like, there's a lot of, you know, strategies and stuff that goes into managing it and supporting it. And it's not a death sentence. It's so doable. But yeah, it's a lifelong journey for all of us in managing anxiety and helping our kids with their anxiety. But my hope, I guess, with the anxiety module is that you can upskill yourself with the same tools that I use with clients. Learn them first with yourself, practice it on yourself, get your anxiety kind of managed, and then tackle it with teaching, right? Because when you, what's the saying? Like, when you know, or when you learn, or when you know, then you teach. And that's what I think we want to do first, is get it sorted with ourselves. And then, or not sorted. I don't think we ever get our anxiety sorted. I think we just get a better understanding of how to manage it with ourselves. And then work on it with your kids or do it together. I have some parents and kids that do it together that they say, you know what, bud, I'm going to work on my anxiety too. And me and Brian are doing some work together. And do you want to do work with your Brian, you know, or your Miggy? My kids call their amygdala Miggy for amygdala for short. You know, do you want to, what's your Miggy saying? You know, and we'll talk about it like that. Oh, my Miggy's saying blah, blah, blah. And we kind of work on it together. It's so bonding for kids. My God. Because anxiety, you feel so alone. You feel so isolated and no one else feels this way. You know, my daughter, one of my kids who's a bit more anxious, she'll say, she has a lot of anxiety at school drop off. And she'll say, I just wish I was normal like everyone else. And that like breaks my heart. Because I want to be like, girl, everyone here is feeling anxious about school drop off. They're just hiding it. You just can't see it. It's only the ones who are crying that you can tell. But girl, everyone is feeling anxious right now. And I think that's, you know, such a beautiful thing that we can communicate to our kids is that you're not in this alone. I struggle with anxiety too. And here's what I do. You know, even if you don't struggle with anxiety, suck it up, say you do. And help them feel less alone that, yeah, dude, I feel the same. Or I feel, and I'll tell my daughter all the time, like, I felt the same at school drop off. I always cried. I missed my mom too. And I'll totally validate her experience and empathize with her that I feel that way and or felt that way and stuff. And it's a really great gift you can give your kids to know that with their anxiety, they're not alone, you know? So yeah, thus endeth the sermon today. I hope this was helpful. Hope you guys got something out of it and my rambling was helpful. Yeah. So yeah, there you go. Chew on that. Bye. If you're a parent or a professional who works with children and you want my help in improving things with the kiddos in your life, or if you're simply a human being feeling kind of stuck and maybe kind of overwhelmed, my online programs have lots of resources, transformative content, one-on-one coaching, group coaching, and a supportive community. If you want to learn more, just go to HeidiRogers.com. All right, friends, thank you as always for tuning in today. Our time is our most precious asset, so I truly appreciate you sharing your time with me. I'll see you right back here for the next episode of Tell the Others.